Hello.
I can hear you now.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Tony, is it?
Yes, it's Tony, all right. This is me, yes.
How are you, Tony? Now we were just talking around ourselves here, around here, and we were just we had a case of nostalgia, and some of us have a case of neuralgia as well. But
okay,
and nostalgia, of course. Yeah. If you look at Dublin, and particularly the north side of Dublin, how it had changed over all the last 50 odd years or so. And there's been quite a lot of changes. And I know you want to talk to us about what changes occurred over there in Dublin generally.
Oh, it's absolutely amazing, the change altogether compared to when I was being brought up, when I was a young boy in this part of Dublin, in particularly the north inner city. It was really, really hard, really hard. And it was amazing how... And to me, how some of the people survived living through those conditions. Nowadays, it's a completely different world. There's so many, many changes that, and I think so for all the better. It's we have so much more now going for us compared to those people in when I was being brought up as a young boy. Okay.
Yeah, but
then it's changed. Like we have now, we have so much public transport. We have the DART, we have the Lewis, we have easy access to cheap air flights, which all these people at my time had nothing like that. You know, and we have modern hospitals now that should be run more efficient than what they are at the minute, but. In the 1940s and 50s, there were no such things as the health centres, or, you know, people hadn't got the facilities that they have now, you know. But the man has changed, the man.
Yeah, well, regard to hospitals, that brings me back to mind. We had Baggot Street Hospital. We had one in... Messers, as they used to call it.
You know?
And we had one over, I can't remember. No, it was over in the south side, down off the South Circle Road. Small hospital. And, of course, the Children's Hospital was in Harker Street at that time, big square building and such. And, you know, we were talking about transport. It brings me back the trams as such, which were, I think they disappeared in about 1948.
Yeah. And more's the pity, more's the pity.
Well, they, at least they ran on time. And the clang, 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 clang. But if you were on a bicycle and caught in the tram tracks, that was quite another thing. You get very bad
talk. It sure was,
Sorry, Tony, just putting in on you. This is Paul, the co-presenter here. Just wanted to ask you, if you were going out of the north side of the city, say, to get a day out now, what tram would you take to get yourself out of the city?
The number tram you would get would be the number 4, I think it was the number 5 tram. It would go to Holt.
So Holt was the best destination to go to if you really wanted to get out of the city for a while?
Yeah.
And would there be many people trying to get on the tram, or would it be,
God, quite a lot of people.
And would you just be going for a swim, or would you go fishing, or what would the reason you were going?
No, well, you basically go, Holt is not very well known for swimming, it would be for fishing, and for going around the harbour.
Oh yeah, you would actually go, I remember someone telling me that they used to have a boat that went out to Orleans Eye. Now, I don't think that happens nowadays.
That's correct.
And that is correct. Can you remember how much it would cost you to go to Orleans Eye?
Oh, my God. My God. It would be only a couple of pennies.
A couple of pennies.
And it was money well spent, was.
Yeah. No, I think
you could go out there and you could see... So many, many different boards. It was like a board sanctuary as well.
The board life. Yeah.
Fantastic. And we are very lucky to have so much things around us here in Dublin. We have beautiful beaches.
Yeah.
We have beautiful parks, and we have the Dublin Mountains, which an awful lot of Dublin people still haven't paid a visit to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, on the north side, it wouldn't be that easy to get to, I suppose, in those times.
No.
And what about the Bull Island? Was that a popular spot?
Oh, yes. Dollymount. Yes,
Dollymount, yes. Yeah.
Dollymount, that's correct. Yes, you would walk across the wooden bridge.
Yes.
And you could watch all the ships coming into Dublin Port from the bay. Absolutely beautiful. And also had a lovely beach there as well.
And tell me now, if you were watching the ships coming up the Liffey, Tony, towards today's ships. Now, I mean, would there be many ships coming up? Like, you know, we all know they're very big.
And mostly all freight ships. You know, like you would see a lot of freight ships carrying and a lot of coal boats.
Mostly.
Yeah. Coming up to the Nardwuar Quays and. You know, and the men would be there waiting to offload the coal.
And well, that would be lots of jobs, I suppose, in the unloading of the coal and that, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. You know, and they, at the end of the, when they was finished being down in the hole of the ship, they filling all the coal up into all the big steel drums, they would be as black as spades when we finished.
Yeah, I'd say they would.
It was fantastic, but there's tremendous change now in Dublin. Yeah.
Well, would you say that?
And I was.
Yeah, go ahead, Tony. Sorry.
I was only down around the Grand Canal area there a couple of days back, and you would think you were in a different city now. It's so all modernised now. It's really, really nice.
Yeah, I have seen.
Completely different now.
Well, would you say that? Any of the jobs that's going on around the docks area, especially the North Docks now, you know, would there be many going to local people, or is that day gone when the locals could get a job?
I don't think there's many people from around that particular area that work on the docks now, because it's all like manual, it's all done by cranes and fork trucks and things like that now.
There's
not much manual work on it, you know. But most of the people down in that particular area of the docks, they there's an awful lot of unemployment in that area.
Still a lot of unemployment, yeah?
There is indeed an awful lot of unemployment. I was brought up around the docks.
You were brought up around there. And what was the name of the street you were from, so...
I was born, we was reared up in St. Lawrence's Mansions in Sheriff Street.
Oh, Sheriff Street, yeah.
And yes, in Sheriff Street.
And what's the memories like of those times, you know?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Brilliant neighbours. Everybody looked after one another.
Yeah.
And we, as young boys and girls, we made our own fun. We had a playground. And they had swings and roundabouts and handball alleys, and they had a little sort of a clubhouse where you could take part in boxing and things like that if you wanted to. And everybody, we were all very, very happy.
Yeah,
we didn't have an awful lot. We didn't have an awful lot, like in families wouldn't have an awful lot of money, but we were happy.
Yeah.
You know, happy. And unfortunately now, over the years, that area has been ravaged by drugs.
Yes.
And
so
it had an awful effect on all the neighbours and the families in that particular area. Some of whom I know quite well and have had a lot of bereavement in the families because of the same drug situation.
Yeah.
Very sad. Very, very sad. But I remember it being a very happy time of my life. Being brought up in Sheriff Street. And I always remember when we would be kicking ball, there would be about 40 or 50 of us, and if a lady or a gentleman was passing by, coming back from the shops, carrying the messages, we would stop playing football until they passed. And one of the boys would carry the messages up the stairs into the flat.
Well, isn't that a lovely thing to remember? Yes, really.
And then we will continue on playing football.
Well,
it was good.
But 20 a team, I'd say you want plenty of space, and it must have took up half the
Well, we hadn't. No, we hadn't. We often played, and the same, I'm sure many of your listeners will remember the saying that next goal, the winner. And it could be about 50 goals each. And you could be playing there for hours until whoever scored the next goal will be the winner.
Yeah.
And we all pack up then and go home and have our tea, go to bed and go to school then.
Next morning. Yeah, but the boxing club is still in Sheriff Street. It is indeed. And then there was Cherry and Smallbridge, which was
I walked in Cherry and Smallbridge in Seville Place.
Yeah, Seville Place, not too far away. And I think that was. Yes, hello, Tony. Hello.
Yeah, okay, and that's. Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They gave a lot of employment.
In Cherry and Smallbridge. It's where I met my wife, as the girl that I eventually married.
Yes, and they used to produce a lot of boxes and printed stuff and all that.
Mostly all boxes, short boxes and shoe boxes and everything. Yeah. And a lot of people from the flats worked in Shane's Marbridge.
Yes, and you know, it gave a lot of employment locally.
Now, it did indeed.
Quite a lot of the dockers came from there, and they used to call them button men. And the stevedore used to pick up the chap with the button. Apparently, it was like a market as such, and everybody would be trying to get a day's work. And Some people would get 7 days' work, and others might get 1 day a month.
The men used to have to go down to the dockside every morning, and it was called a reed. The foreman would call out their names, and whoever's name was called out would get a day's work, and the rest of us have to go home.
Yeah.
And that was called the reed.
The reed. And you got paid daily too, I think.
They did indeed. They did indeed.
Queuing up to get there. Of course, all that day is gone now. We have containers are dropped and all that type of thing.
Oh, it's all containers now. It's all completely modernised now, They were happy days and memory days, good memories, you know. They were. I had seven brothers and one sister. And we all lived in a two-bedroom flat in Sheriff Street.
And another thing that, if you could scrape up fourpence, you could go to the cinema. And of course, there was about 27 cinemas in Dublin, all over the place.
And that's true.
There'd be folly and operas and all this type of thing to get you to come back next week.
Exactly. So, they were happy days.
What was your favourite cinema, Tony?
Well, my favourite cinema was the Royal, the Theatre Royal.
Oh, the Royal, yeah. Very good.
Mr. Campbell, etc.
Yes, and can you tell us now what kind of a show would be, if it was coming up to Christmas time, what kind of a show would be on?
Well, they used to have all the pantomime shows on, and they would have the Royalettes dancing. They get a beautiful dancing.
Yeah.
And they had a man used to play the organ. A big organ, a man called by the name of Tommy Dando.
Oh, Tommy, yes, I heard his name, yeah.
Tommy Dando. And the show would be on before the show, a main movie. And it was such a beautiful building inside that I think it held something like 3,500 to 4,000 people.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
And there was about three or four balconies. And in each balcony, you had a bar and a restaurant, and it was an awful shame that they knocked it down.
Yes.
That building now, that's in the news with the Apollo building where all the homeless people are fighting for. That's exactly where the Tiara Isle was.
Yeah, yeah. So,
okay.
I heard it said by an old friend of mine one time. He said, when they knocked down the Isle, he took the heart out of Dublin.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And Nelson's Pillar. Part and parcel of Dublin.
Yes.
And part and parcel of Dublin.
Yeah.
And the artists used to be slipping across the road to the pub, that famous pub there, just across from the stage.
Mulligan's.
It was directly opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd see them flying over in between acts and back again. Like,
and, it was said that the pub that you're talking about was supposed to have the best pint of Guinness in Dublin. At the time.
Yes. And would you know that now well? Were you fond of your pint?
Well, I was. I used to drink, you know, but I haven't had a drink now in the last 15, 16 years.
Oh, well, that's good.
I just decided myself to do something else.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
But I enjoyed my time as a young lad growing up in my city. Because I'm very, very proud of my city.
Yes.
I love Dublin. I love Ireland. I love Dublin people. I love all Irish people. And we have so much going for us in this country that if only the people that was in charge at the minute could get their act together, we would have a little paradise here.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, They don't seem to know what they're doing, you know.
And who would you say, Tony? Now, looking back on you, who was the best, say, Lord Mayor or councillor or person in Dublin who done most for Dublin? Would you say?
I would say, without a shadow of a doubt, and the Lord Mayor of Dublin at the time was called Alfie Bourne.
Alfie Bourne.
And his bowler hat.
Alfie Bourne.
Yeah.
Alfie Bourne. He was a great, great man. He was the Lord Mayor of Dublin. And he would come around every day and every night and he would distribute all sorts of goodies to the kids and he would deliver stuff to people's homes. And he was a wonderful man, you know. And the kids, we used to make up a song about him.
Can you remember it?
About Alfie Bourne.
Can you remember the song?
I can't remember. It was like folk for Alfie Bourne.
We know the one. And then they had De Valera another time on it. And of course, there was another great man who I knew. Tony Gregory came from Sheriff Street, and he did a lot for that area.
He did an awful lot,
and the lady that O'Sullivan, I think, is her name, silver-haired lady. She is TD for that area now. At the moment, we had her here once or twice, and Tony now. He was a very, very good guy. Now we knew him when he was young, when he started, when he was a councillor, actually, you know. And he was very vocal, and we met him umpteen times, you know. And he certainly did get something done down there, including the.
He sure did.
Yeah, the financial centre.
He certainly did. He was a great man for the area.
Yeah.
So now we go to him.
Now they're saying
more people like him, I think.
They're saying, Tony, that they're going to invest some kind of funding into the North Inner City, Tony. Now, if it's so that does, where would you personally say that money should go? You know, what should they do to help people? Have you any ideas on that?
I think there should be more facilities for the youth of today down there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that they should have more facilities for them because they have been sort of overlooked when the financial centre was built, you know, and they feel like they're forgotten people.
Yes.
And I have a lot of friends and of all neighbours still down there, the children and the grandchildren, and all they need is to something basic for the youth to do.
Yes.
You know, more education for the places where they can go to,
yeah.
You know, and to learn more about technology, you know,
yeah.
And to that sort of thing that they need, you know.
What was there when you were a young man, Tony? Now, was there a secondary school or a technical school there? What was really
No, you just had the girls and boys primary school at Nantes O'Toole.
Yeah.
You know, and you had the Christian Brothers School in the place, which is still there.
Yeah.
But the other one, the only other school that you could go to after you left primary would be O'Connell Boys on Jekyll Road, just past Summer Hill there.
Yeah, and would you say many of your mates go there? Can you remember?
Oh yeah. A lot of my friends went there. One of my friends, believe it or not, it was a very very close friend of mine. Was, I'm sure you know, the singer I'm going to tell you about was Luke Kelly.
Oh, Luke. Yeah, we all know Luke so well.
Yes.
You know his voice.
No, he came from the flats. And I piled around with him. We went dancing together. And we went. He used to come with us. And before we go to the dance, we would meet up in one of the local pubs. And Luke would start off singing his ballads.
Oh, gee. So
he was a tremendous. And I knew all his family.
Yes.
The flat that he lived in Lerner's Mansions, it went on fire. Now, none of the family were hurt or damaged, but the flat was completely destroyed. And they moved his family out to Whitehall.
Yes, I do know that, yeah.
And that's where Luke ended up. But he was a personal friend of mine, Luke Kelly.
Yeah.
You know, and he went to St. Leonard's O'Toole's Christian Brothers School.
Yes.
And, you know, but people like that, you need something there for these people to have a hope and aspirations for them to do something to take their minds off just being hanging around.
Yes, yeah.
Too much.
Well, was Luke, when you knew Luke, was he beginning to get mixed up in the unions in those times? He seemed to be a good working class kind of leader.
He was indeed. But he was, like myself. I eventually went from my days in Sheridan Smallbridge when I left there. I went on to work in the printing trades for 40 years after that.
Oh, yes.
And I was heavily involved with the Irish Transport and General Workers Union.
Yeah.
I was a shop steward, I was a branch committee member. And I was done that for about 20, 30 years.
Yes.
I did. And Luke was very, very trade union minded. He was.
Okay.
Always wanting to look after, to make sure people got fair wages for a fair week's work. That type of things, you know. So I hope my little conversation has been a bit helpful to you.
I know, it's lovely hearing of the good old, especially when you say them, and we know they are true, that you were happy there at the time, you know. So I think we're going to have a break now.
Well, if you stay on the line, Tony, we're going to have a little break now, and we'll play a bit of music, and we'll be back to you, right?
Fair enough. Okay.
See you, Dan.
Thank you.
Bye.
Ah, hello. We're back, and I think Tony might be still with us. Are you there, Tony?
I am indeed.
Yeah. Nostalgia is a great thing, and insights with regard to what things were in the past, etc. But life is changing very, very rapidly. Like, and for senior citizens like ourselves, things can be sort of daunting at times. Now, particularly with technology, and IT, and computers, and At one time, it was even the telephone. If you could get a telephone, some people were afraid to lift up the receiver. But of course, three-year-old kids now are going around with phones to their ear, and things have changed very, very fast.
They are indeed. It has changed quite a lot.
Yeah.
And what effect do you think this would have on the senior citizens as such? Would they get dismayed, or would they just hack on? And I know senior citizens can get anything on a computer nowadays, but of course I'm still with Pigeon Post, like a lot of people.
No, I understand. You see, a lot of elderly people, like, they do not like change.
Yeah.
You know, they don't like change because it's the way they have been living all their lives. And when all new technology comes about, they think it's not for them. You know, it's only for young people. But I have learned how to use. I have an iPad, which is a great help to me. I know how to Google for things, and I also am able to go on Facebook, believe it or not. I have a friend on Facebook that I'm able to communicate with, and I have a lot of family still in the UK and other countries that I'm able to communicate with, you know, and in that way, that sort of thing is great. It's great to be able to do, but some elderly people, unfortunately, they don't want change, as I said. You know.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody is more or less like that. It depends what age you are. And now, with regard to facilities for senior citizens down in Sheriff's Eden around that area, are there any, age-friendly clubs or... I'm trying to think of the name that people meet, and it might be for a cup of tea and a chat, and like ourselves, talking about things past. Do you remember Bridie Dunn or Bridie whatever it is?
I'm not quite sure now what is there for the elderly people at the moment, but I do know they have facilities there for... you know, young mothers and things like that, you know, where they meet and they have things like that going for them, you know. Now, I don't know. I'm sure that they have something there for the elderly people of the area as well, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're very good. They look after one another. They do, you know. And when you're brought up in an area like that, you just start to become part of the family. If you understand what I mean, you know. But I'm sure they look after the elderly people down there as well as anywhere else, you know. But I don't know of any offhand of any organisation that does that at the minute, you know, because I haven't lived in that area for quite some time now. Yeah.
But
you know?
Could you tell us, Tony, you were saying you were off the drink for 15 years or something now, roughly. And what did you find to preoccupy by your time now, especially being retired? Like, you know, when you weren't drinking with your pals, what were you doing then? Did you?
Well, I was. What I done was I'm very keen on sports. I always have been. I played a bit of football all my life, and I done a little bit of boxing. I did in the boxing club. And when I no longer started, I didn't stop going to my local pub to meet my friends. I still went to the pub and I would have some tea, a soft drink, and spend an hour or two there chatting with them. You know, so the only thing that changed was I stopped drinking alcohol.
Oh, okay.
You know, but I didn't, I still went to meet my friends. You know, and then I was able then at the time. Then I'm a very big Manchester United football club supporter. Have been since I was 8 years old, and I go away many times for weekends to see, if I can, to see a game. And I spent some time over there with my family. My son is still over there. And my grandchildren, grandnephews and nieces and so many, you know. But there's more to life to me than just spending your hours in the pub drinking and, you know, if you understand what I mean.
No, we're getting the message, Tony, yes. Yeah, we're getting the message.
I have no qualms, and I admire somebody that's able to go to work and look after the family, and then if they want to go out and even have a couple of pints and come home, that's brilliant. You know, but some people abuse alcohol and neglect their families.
Yes,
that's the part
too
of
true,
life,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, that sounds good. Yeah. So Man United in a strange sort of roundabout way just sort of kept you moving. So that's...
Well, it has done. It has done, you know.
Yeah.
And my son is in Manchester now, and he is an avid supporter as well. He's a season ticket holder, and when I want to go to a game, he gets the ticket for me, you know.
So,
and... it goes back years. Goes
yeah,
back
so
years,
it sounds like a family
know.
Tradition. Man United is the family tradition. So it's
well,
it's great that you... Yeah, go ahead.
My two married daughters now, both of them, but particularly my eldest daughter, I think she has the same feeling for the club that I have when I was only starting off. She's an avid... I was a Man United supporter.
Yeah. Well, I suppose they look at you and see how well you ended up and said, well, we could go down that road as well.
Ah, well, I suppose so, yeah. But, no, it's just like, to me, I have a great interest in football in general.
Yes.
Yeah. I love watching football, you know, and I like to watch football to be played as it should be played.
Yeah.
And I always take my hat off to what I see a good team playing. No matter who they are, I say they're a brilliant team.
Yeah.
You know, I don't just see one team. You know, I love football, but I think, you know, the present day footballers, they are paid far too much money.
I was just going to ask you that question, Tony, because I just say a lot of my mates now are saying that the money now has spoiled a whole lot. So, but you see,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. I think it's unfair. You know, when you think of the vast amount of money that these young men are being paid.
Yes.
Right, and they're getting paid. Some of them are getting paid nearly £200,000 pounds a week. And when you think of the salary that a top a consultant surgeon here are in the UK, how much they get paid per year, never mind per week.
Yes.
It doesn't seem to be fair.
Well,
you know, but that's just the business. It's a big business now, football.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to takes away from the whole meaning of the game, you know.
And is there no way in your mind that you're a man that's watched it since you were 6 or 8, whatever you were saying there, and is there no way around that, sort of trying to curtail that kind of thing, you know? Do you know that paid... There's nothing we can do now.
It's like I said, it's big business now, you know, and they have to compete against one another. You know, and most of the clubs now in the UK, the likes of Chelsea and Man United and Man City, they're all owned by very, very wealthy people who, you know, and they just throw money at these players when they want them. And, you know, it more or less, it's like a rat race.
Yeah.
You know, the people that have the most money will have the best players. They don't always be successful, but they're able to buy up all the top players.
Yeah.
And that way, it's an unfair advantage to the smaller clubs.
Yes, yes.
Who
are
struggling on lower attendances and can't compete with these big clubs, you know.
Yeah.
But as I said, it's like business. You know, the big pharmaceutical companies and the oil companies and all that.
Yeah.
They have the monopoly, you know, unfortunately, you know.
What's your memories now of, say, your sporting heroes that were around in Sheriff Street when you were young? Who did you look up to as a sporting hero coming from around your own area?
There was one man in particular, and he went on to play in League One football, a man by the name of Ben Hannigan. He played for Shelbourne. He did. But he played football with us in the Sheriff Street playground.
Oh yeah, well, that was that was one of those 50-a-side matches, wasn't it?
It's an apprenticeship.
Exactly. But this man Ben Hannigan, he was one of the best junior footballers that you could ever watch.
Yeah.
And he was a lovely bloke, and all the younger kids, they all looked up to him. But Ben went on to play for Shelbourne League of Ireland, and he was a tremendous, tremendous footballer.
Yeah.
You know, there were so many people from the area that came that done well for themselves, you know.
Yeah.
I have great memories, but as I said, I can't think now offhand of somebody else, you know, but
yeah.
There's one man still down in Sheriff Street, and he's a very good friend, mate of mine. He's actually over the North Wall community. People, you know, he's heavily involved, has been all his life. His name is Jerry Fay. He has a shop in Seven Place still. He has, and he was one of the best footballers I ever seen playing.
Yeah.
He had the opportunity one time when he was much younger. He was given the opportunity to go away to the UK for trials. And because he was living with his mother at the time, he was the only son there at the time, he didn't want to leave his mother. Yeah. But he would have made it.
Yes.
He would have made it big time. And I'm sure if he's listening to this radio, he knows because he's a very reserved, quiet man his own way. But he does tremendous work for his area in the North Wall Community Association. A great man, a good bloke, and he was a great friend, a good mate of mine he was. Also, he was also a good mate of Luke.
Oh, Luke, yeah.
You know? He was, you know, but I still have a lot of people that I know, like down around that particular area, you know, and when I read and hear what has happened over the past decade, two decades, you know, because of all this terrible, terrible drug addiction and drug dealing and people being killed and people being badly hurt, you know, it's sad, you know, but they need something down there to help them, you know, with more facilities and to look after the elderly people and, if possible, to run courses for them to learn how to use the simple thing of a mobile phone and then how to use a computer, you know, even for 1 hour a night or something like that, to learn them how to try and communicate with their families who they might have in Australia or America who they have never had a chance to see, and even learn them how to Skype, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they can see their families, they can talk to, and you know, then something like that needs to.
Yeah.
I hope it is happening, but if it's not, I hope somebody's listening.
Yeah.
And they do.
Well,
we do hope,
Tony, that some of the local councillors or some of the local politicians are listening in, and from your mouth,
yeah,
and your knowledge of the area, you're just saying education is the answer. That's what you're telling us. And we'd agree with you.
Exactly.
In Near FM too.
Never too old to learn. Never too old to learn.
Yeah.
And the more you learn, the better for you, yourself and your family. Because I even tell this to my own grandchildren, you know, that I know they it's hard for them, you know, when it comes to the junior cert and the leaving cert, and then you know, it's hard, and they're inclined to get bored and say, look, at the end of the day, they all come back to you. But the more you learn, the more you gain.
Yes, right? Yes.
And because, like, people of my age, I'm sure, other people that's listening will know that I had to leave school when I was 14 years of age. And that's the basic education that I had.
Yes.
You know, when my mother had to take me out of school when I was 14 because she got a job for me that I was, you know, to help pay, to help her.
Yes.
And I had to leave school. I didn't progress any further than primary school level, you know. But there's so many opportunities there now for young and old. You know, if people are just start doing something for the people, give them a bit of hope and say, look, this is what we're going to try, and we think this will be a great benefit to the young and the old people, the elderly people. You know, you need that in any area. You know, you need that community spirit. You need to see people doing something and encourage people to do the same thing. You know, because it's a great city we live in. People are believing that we're all the troubles and all these gang warfares and the shootings and everything like that. People of Dublin are the salt of the earth. No matter where I am in the world, if I'm just across the UK or I go away on a foreign holiday, I always tell people about one beautiful city, Dublin, and the lovely people that's in it. Mm-hmm. You know, we have so much going for us. We have beautiful beaches around our city, you know, beautiful parks. We have the second biggest park. We have the biggest park in Europe, in the Phoenix Park. It's the biggest park in Europe. It's only the second biggest in the world. You know, people don't realise how beautiful of a city we have. It's almost history, you know. Going back to the famine in 1960, you know, and so on. And it's a wonderful city, you know, a city that I'll always love and will always hold in regard, you know.
But Tony, with regard to, at one time, you know, a community like East Wall or Sheriff Street and that, everybody knew everybody and everybody knew everybody's business as such. But now, Ireland today now is in an entirely different place. We have a huge amount of non-nationals emigrating to Ireland as such. And and they get into communities, and I've no doubt if they go down to Sheriff Street, they'd be welcomed in there with open arms as such. And but
I would hope so.
And the diverse communities as such, you know, and of course, at one time they said, sir, he's a Cork man, so he's only coming up and taking our jobs. Of course, the Cork men didn't like that at all, but however, that was totally untrue, but that attitude applies somewhere. Now, you were talking about footballers, and it just popped into my mind, getting an enormous amount of money. And I remember when Stanley Matthews went on strike to get £20 a week.
That's correct.
And now they're getting to £20 for a fraction of a second. To get back to yesteryear, you know, at one time, particularly around this time of year, people would be making decorations out of all bits and pieces and things and such, and put the fairy lights and all this. And the big thing was to get to a pantomime. Now, there was pantomimes everywhere, in parish halls, and of course, theatres if you could afford them, and that type of thing. And the kids would be trying to get into the pantomime dressed up as elf or whatever it would be, you know, such.
Yeah.
And of course, we had a huge amount of characters, actors, you know. Jimmy O'Dea, of course, was top of the heap.
Marion Potter,
you know. And there was a big, long, tall chap, I can't remember. He ended up as an usher in the cinema in Fairview.
Yeah, and you also had Cecil Sheridan.
Oh, yeah, and he's a man, a terrible shaky man.
That's correct.
He used to write the jokes, apparently, for all the scripts and that.
Well, they were great. The pantomimes were great. And even after I got married and my children were young, we always tried to bring them to the Gaiety to see a pantomime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Mother Goose and all these sorts of pantomime. They're fabulous, you know, lovely times, you know. But I think that the young kids nowadays, they're not really into going to see a pantomime, you know.
Oh,
I think
there's very few of them. I say there's very few of them. There's only three or four big ones. And of course, the kids shouting, he's behind you. Yeah. He's behind you, mister.
I know, and they say, no, he isn't. Oh, yes, he is. I know. Yeah. Good times. Yeah.
And of course, another thing.
You know.
Another thing that we had, people had, if they could afford it, was the radio wearing and such. You know, it was very laid back and politically correct station and such, and they didn't play nice dance music and this type of thing. They were all terribly politically correct until a couple of headbangers came around and he wrecked the place. That was the other entertainment. Yeah. And of course, there was always, when they got big, it was 16, 17, if they could scrape up the few bob, to get to the local hop. And when all the fellas, stood on one side and all the girls stood on the other, eyeing one another up. If it was a parochial hall, the parish priest might be there eyeing up, seeing that there was a respectable distance between two partners dancing.
Exactly.
You could see daylight between them. Well, you could maybe see a huge amount of daylight between them. there was always then the sodality. We'd always had the two preachers and the empress, and one would be banging the pulpit, there'd be damnation, the other fellow would be the next week, it'd be
that has all changed now.
Totally and utterly. I'd say the girls went to the non school and the fellas went to the local primary school and such. And of course, they were talking about Sheriff's Seat. There's still one there at the bridge, but I think it's 1924 was built. And they had a pink surrounding on it as such. I think it looks like it was built with mass concrete. But I presume that was the local school. And of course, the teacher had the cane. Discipline was the thing. And if you got six of the best, you'd be coming home and your hands would be sore as such, of course. And when you went to the Christian Brothers, that was an entirely... O'Connell School was an entirely different situation.
Did you yourself go to the Lions O'Toole's or any of those schools?
No, I didn't actually. I was over from the far side of the city. I went to Think Street and I went to Loretto. And of course, like I was saying, the hospitals, there was a hospital there too. Now, Tony, I'm afraid we could be talking for another hour or so with no problem, but apparently the man is waving at us from the control box. And our time is up, and we'd like to thank you very, very much for coming. And have a happy Christmas and a prosperous New Year.
And
Take care, Tony. Thanks for all.
And the staff at Indeed FM. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Tony.
Bye, Tony. Bye.
Bye now.